DiscerningHearts.com presents Christian Apologetics with Dr. R.R. Reno. Dr. Reno is the editor at First Things, a journal of religion, culture, and public life. He has also served as a professor of theology at Creighton University. His theological work has been published in many academic journals. Essays and opinion pieces on religion, public life, contemporary culture, and current events have appeared in Commentary and The Washington Post. He's also the author of numerous books, including Fighting the Noonday Devil. This series explores numerous facets of faith and reason in the life of the church and the world, grounded on the work of giants such as St. Thomas Aquinas, St. Bonaventure, Blessed John Newman, Blessed John Paul II, G.K. Chesterton, Blaise Pascal, and Stephen Barr. Dr. Reno helps us to open our minds to make the journey to our hearts. Christian Apologetics with Dr. R.R. Reno. I'm your host, Chris McGregor. Welcome back, Professor Reno.
A pleasure to be here.
We have been scanning and reflecting on Christian apologetics through many centuries and some wonderful masters of the ability to be able to translate our faith and what we believe into a way that we can absorb it, but also to refute a lot of the arguments of the world. We've looked at everyone from Aquinas to Bonaventure to Newman, and it is quite wonderful that we're able to, as we approach the end of this, to look at someone who has kind of had a renaissance maybe in the last 10 years or so, G.K. Chesterton.
Yeah, he's a fascinating figure, you know, born in the 19th century and sort of flourished in the first half of the 20th century. He died in the 1930s. Kind of an extraordinary literary figure, journalist, art critic, not really formally trained, went to art school instead of going off to college. But clearly a verbal genius. Anybody who reads his works will see all the wordplay and all of the clever sentences. And he writes with what I tell my students is a reversible raincoat sentence. You know, ask not what you can do for your country, but what your country can do for you. Or how's that go? No, the other way around, I guess, in the famous John Kennedy speech. That kind of inverted sentence that you can turn one way or the other. So he's a lot of fun to read. And that's one reason why I think he has a perennial appeal. And he also has a very winsome picture of Christian faith as a fulfillment of our natural aptitude as rational, creative creatures. Not only is he kind of a fun writer, but the spirit of his work is very joyous and very happy and very optimistic. Mm-hmm. And that's, I think that's always, when one of the criticisms of Christianity is that, oh, well, you know, life of faith, it's all sacrifice and, you know, sackcloth and ashes and kneeling long hours and denying yourself. Well, here you have a writer that really puts an accent on the joy of faith.
His experience, I think, that was the first of actually sitting and debating with those who would claim that atheistic mantle, like a George Bernard Shaw or maybe an H.G. Wells, in front of an audience. I mean, because all the people we have met so far have been writing essentially and teaching in either a university system or from a seat within the church.
Yeah, no, that's a great point. I mean, he was friends with them, Shaw and Wells and these sorts of folks. And he would love to go to these public debates, and evidently was a great performer, very mm-hmm. witty and really quick on his feet. And so, although he's a very rotund man, it's kind of hard to imagine him being quick on his feet, but in the mental sense, he was very quick. And I think had a large influence on kind of intellectual culture in his era. I mean, he made Christianity and Catholicism seem cool. I mean, not mm-hmm. to use a now old-fashioned term that Chesterton would never even have known in his own day, but it kind of made it people go, wow, hey, there's a really smart person who's really engaged in contemporary issues who thinks that his Catholic faith is the linchpin that holds it all together.
Interesting that coming from a self-proclaimed agnostic background as a young boy, and then, as you point out, he was an art critic, he would find his way and reason his way into believing in a creator and then eventually in even becoming a member of the church.
Yeah, I mean, I think that what he, as he tells the story in his wonderful book, Orthodoxy, he gives a defense of Christianity in the modern era, but he organizes it kind of around a kind of, this is how I came to see these things, kind of a semi-autobiographical approach. He talks about how he would go to meetings of socialists and vegetarians and so on, and he would find that he was attracted, in other words, to, I guess we would call it idealism. Mm-hmm. A youthful person wants to make the world a better place and so on, and he found that they all seemed to be only half true, so to speak.
Mm-hmm.
They were trying, a vegetarianism, for instance, was trying to, it doesn't matter what you eat, and compassion for animals is an important thing, but that it was trying to use something, I don't know, relatively insignificant in order to make it cosmically significant, or socialism. You know, it's important how we as a society organize ourselves to promote the common good. That's really key. But there was a kind of religious fervor, like, let's say, in both of those areas.
Mm-hmm.
And seeing this sort of religious fervor, he began to wonder what the right sort of balance is, and where does one find true religion or something that's actually workable and feasible. And then when he realized that the people he hung around with, the sort of progressive, free-thinking crowd, that they weren't really free-thinking. They had all their own dogmas, so to speak. And that he has a wonderfully funny passage where he talks about how Christianity is criticized for being too pessimistic, doctrine of original sin, of course, and at the same time, in the next breath, criticized for being too optimistic, life after death. And that Christianity is, on the one hand, criticized for its violence, crusades and so forth, and then at the next moment, criticized for its pacifism, his Sermon on the Mount, from Francis of Assisi. And this caused him to go, wait a minute, how could it be both too optimistic and too pessimistic, too violent and too submissive, too arrogant and too humble? And so this made him begin to wonder whether or not Christianity didn't actually have what he often refers to in this book, Orthodoxy, the kind of balancing point upon which the diversity and complexity of human life can actually make sense.
Mm-hmm.
So instead of a system or a syllogism, what Chesterton typically sees, that the coherence of life depends upon having the right center of gravity.
So very important for him was that there had to be certain standards. Would you say he really spoke out about moral relativism at a time when they really didn't call it moral relativism?
Right. Well, that's the idea, for instance, that Christianity is criticized for being dogmatic and authoritarian. And as I was saying, part of his kind of movement to faith was a realization that, now, wait a minute, he's hanging out with all these socialists and so forth who are profoundly dogmatic. So that you can't be a progressive unless you have a measure by which you can measure progress. You can't champion change or revolution unless you have a principle or a standard that contemporary society is not living up to. And so, as he put it in one of his memorable phrases, if I think I got this one right, we need rules not only for ruling, but for rebelling. That mm-hmm. is to say, a rule obviously is what we use to organize society. And that's obviously the source of authority for secular government. Why do we prohibit murder? Why do we prohibit theft? Well, because it's wrong. But that same rule is what inspires people to overthrow unjust governments. Because instead of compromising pragmatically, they say, well, no, you can't compromise with this because it is wrong. Mm-hmm. And so, I mean, this is kind of, I think part of his genius is the way in which in contemporary debates, often there's a kind of tendency rhetorically to separate sort of the good guys from the bad guys. And the good guys are flexible, inclusive, and so on. The bad guys are rigid, dogmatic, and exclusive. And Chesterton didn't live long enough to enter our time. Mm-hmm. When you have, I remember one of my friends pointed out to me a church sign by the highway that said, "We include everybody who includes everybody." Which actually, as my friend pointed out, turns out to be not very many people. So that becomes tolerance becomes its own dogma, mm-hmm. so to speak, or inclusivity becomes its own dogma, or relevance becomes its own dogma. And Chesterton just had a great nose for this sort of thing, and an ability to draw it out. And this is one of the reasons why, even though the book is 100 years old, it's really very timely, and you feel that his kind of vigorous, fun, kind of witty engagement with secular critics of Christianity are still really quite helpful today.
It is. You have to laugh when he compares madmen and materialists, that they think the same.
They think the same, and this goes back to the notion that we make sense out of life when we find the proper point of gravity, center of gravity. Mm-hmm. And the madman and the materialist are both people who have gone, if you will, off the rails or have lost that center of gravity. And how does this happen? Well, I mean, for the madman, it happens in obviously a person who's mentally ill for lots of reasons. Mm-hmm. But one manifestation might be a kind of insistence on a single point to the exclusion of reason. So someone is paranoid, for instance, thinks that they're going to be assassinated or that their food is being poisoned and so on. And I mean, I've known people who are, in a very mild sense, paranoid and not institutionalized. But you kind of walk away saying it's hard to live a life where the diversity of reality is being crammed into this maniacal single preoccupation or concern. And that must be difficult to mm-hmm. overcome, and people do try to overcome that in their treatment. But the materialist is doing the same thing, trying to cram the diversity of human reality into a single system. It is the case that sometimes people are out to get you. That's the famous joke, if people are out to get you, then, right, it's not paranoia, it's realism, and it is the case that we are material beings. I mean, my body is material and so on, but it's a kind of mania that wants to reduce all human experience to material things. And so it's always kind of brilliant the way he draws that out, and clever, and also, again, sort of, at least, my experience, listening to lecturers who espouse a kind of strict materialism, it kind of fits. I think, ooh, what's going on with that? Or another example of a mania might be a kind of strict utilitarianism, that everything at the end of the day depends upon the aggregate amount of experience, pleasure, or pain. Mm-hmm. And so you get someone like Peter Singer, who's really a very smart man, but who teaches at Princeton and has advocated that the rights of animals are the same as human beings, and that because newborn infants aren't sensate in the way that people have achieved a high degree of consciousness, we can kill them and so on and so forth. That you kind of listen to him talk and you think there's a man whose moral experience is in the grip of a theory, and it's a kind of mania that's taken over what you and I would think of as just so normal moral perceptions. So Chesterton looks around himself in modern life and thinks that an awful lot of modern philosophy is in the grips of manias of various sorts.
We'll return in just a moment to Christian Apologetics with Dr. R.R. Reno. Did you know that you can obtain a free app which contains all your favorite Discerning Hearts programs? Father Timothy Gallagher, Dr. Anthony Lillis, Archbishop George Lucas, Father Maurizio Sfildi, and so many more, including episodes from Inside the Pages, can be obtained on the Discerning Hearts free app. This also includes all the novenas and devotionals and prayers, including the Holy Rosary and Stations of the Cross, the Chaplet of St. Michael, and the Seven Sorrows of Our Lady, all available on the Discerning Hearts free app. Visit the iTunes and Google Play app stores to obtain your free Discerning Hearts app today. A teaching from St. Paul from his letter to the Ephesians. Let no one deceive you with empty arguments, for because of these things the wrath of God is coming upon the disobedient. So do not be associated with them. For you were once darkness, but now you are light in the Lord. Live as children of light, for light produces every kind of goodness and righteousness and truth. Try to learn what is pleasing to the Lord. Take no part in the fruitless works of darkness. Rather, expose them. For it is shameful even to mention the things done by them in secret. But everything exposed by the light becomes visible, for everything that becomes visible is light. Therefore it says, "Awake, O sleeper, and arise from the dead, and Christ will give you light." Watch carefully, then, how you live, not as foolish persons, but as wise, making the most of the opportunity, because the days are evil. Therefore, do not continue in ignorance, but try to understand what is the will of the Lord. And do not get drunk on wine, in which lies debauchery, but be filled with the Spirit, addressing one another in psalms and hymns and spiritual songs, singing and playing to the Lord in your hearts, giving thanks always and for everything in the name of our Lord Jesus Christ to God the Father.
Hello, my name is Deacon Omar Gutierrez, and I want to ask you to support Discerning Hearts in a special way. We, Chris McGregor, the board, and I all know that not everyone listening can help financially. We know we have listeners from all parts of the world, and we have made a commitment since the beginning to make the truths shared through Discerning Hearts totally free. So while you may not be able to contribute financially, what you can do is certainly pray, but also give us positive reviews on whatever platform you use to listen to us. If it's iTunes, Android, Stitcher, or Spotify, however it is that you get these podcasts, or if you're on YouTube and you like our videos, please give us a good rating and write a review. The more good ratings and reviews we get, the higher our profile, and the more listeners will discover us. Listeners who may have the means to contribute in the future. Please consider rating us and writing a positive review today.
We now return to Christian Apologetics with Dr. R.R. Reno. What I love about him is that he has such a great love for the human person, that in how we were created and that gift of imagination, that is something so unique that if you try to distill it down to what you just spoke of, to try to say that we're on par with certain animals or anything like that, that there's something missing. That's the thing that Chesterton will say, that you just know there's something missing in that argument, but in a lot of cases we don't know how to respond to that.
Yeah, your imagination is a key category for him. The question might be something like this. Apologetic question might be something like this. You could say that we've looked at John Paul II, maybe he's a good person to draw an analogy with. He wants to see faith and reason working together, the two wings is a metaphor he has, for in order that humans might achieve their full potential. That our reason might be perfected by faith, and that our faith might be deepened by reason. And it's a kind of humanism, humanization, and that there's a, I think we see this in the current Pope as well, that Pope Benedict also worries that a secular culture is not fully human because it doesn't reach beyond our strict sort of material lives, and so on. And Chesterton has his own way of expressing that. He says that we humans want life to be romantic, and that's the term he uses. Romance is a kind of key element. And you think about it, well, what's like a romantic comedy? Typical romantic comedy, boy meets girl. But hey, it's not just boy meets girl. It's the improbability of it, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so it's the big time CEO who meets the artist who you know, devil may care, free spirit artist. And so there's a kind of clash. It's not natural that they would go fall in love.
Mm-hmm.
And all romances are like that. It's the Romeo and Juliet, separated by their family quarrels. And it's the in spite of quality of love, not the because of quality of love, that makes for romance. And so what Chesterton says is that romance is a romantic view of life, is that in one sense things are fitting, and in the other sense things are alien or strange or new.
Mm-hmm.
So it's both, he tells a wonderful story at the beginning of this book he said this book is really about romance, and originally he was going to write a novel to express it, about a yachtsman who leaves England to discover the new world, gets lost on his journey, and winds up landing on the beach in Brighton, which is a kind of English resort, and then storms the beach and plants the British flag in front of the pavilion there, which looks like an Asian temple. Mm-hmm. It was built in the 19th century to look like an Asian temple. And as he's doing it, he suddenly realizes that he hasn't discovered a new land, but he's actually come home again. And it's funny and amusing, but what he says there is that this captures the true nature of what we desire, both to be have wonder at the world and to be welcomed by the world. So it's wonder and welcome together that he thinks are the things that we seek. And that Christianity with the doctrine of the Incarnation is both an affirmation through Christ's, the Son of God, becoming man, is obviously an affirmation of our humanity. But the fact that he's very God, he's very man and very God, very, very divine, a divine and human, that the divine dimension pulls us and stretches us beyond our natural lives. So it's that combination together that he thinks Christianity provides us with, a way that we can both be angry at the world and at the same time love the world, be feel like this is where we belong, and at the same time be amazed at the miracle of the world as it is. So that's a pretty powerful insight, I think.
Mm-hmm.
And that goes beyond his clever phrasing and so on. A lot of people criticize Chesterton and say that, you know, he's just kind of a clever rhetorical writer. You know, I like it myself. I mean, I could, mm-hmm. I like a well-turned sentence, but I think it's selling him short. He really does have a vision of the ordinariness and the extraordinariness of the life of faith, that the life of faith both roots you in reality and also urges you towards something completely otherworldly. So you think about marriage and the celibate life.
Mm-hmm.
Christianity affirms both. Marriage, I mean, what could be more, I don't know, what could be more of an affirmation of our biological identities and our role in the natural life cycle? And then at the same time, Christianity affirms the religious life, the life of celibacy. And what could be more otherworldly? What could be more, what could be more of an aspiration beyond the limitations of biological life?
It's all paradox, isn't it?
That's one of his views, right? That paradox, at its worst, are two contradictions that you don't know what to do with. And for Chesterton, life is paradoxical, and Christianity and the doctrine of the Incarnation, especially, provides you with a balancing point where the paradox don't conflict with each other. They don't fight against each other. They don't destroy each other.
Now we're coming to the close of the series that we began weeks ago. What is your hope for someone who has been following us?
Well, I mean, I teach this material to my students, and I have two goals, I think, with my students. One goal is that the students learn enough about what it means to be an intellectual, so to speak, that they are able to see that most contemporary criticisms of Christianity as mindless are based on a very superficial understanding of what it means to be mindful. So that the students and listeners don't enter into their adult lives with a sort of easy rejection of Christianity based on these kind of simplistic claims about it being ill-considered or lacking in reason or lacking in critical sensibility or so on and so forth. Now, of course, most listeners to this program are probably not in that camp. There are already people who have affirmed the Christian faith. And for those students, I have plenty of students who fall into that camp as well. And for them, I want them to, this material, think about St. Thomas Aquinas and the kind of subtlety and nuance about the relation of faith and reason, the role of arguments in theology. They're not simple points. Or John Paul II and his very powerful vision of the unity of faith and reason, that the life of inquiry, critical thought, reflection, exploration has a complex and fruitful relationship to the doctrines of the faith, the teachings of the church. And that it's not just a matter of sort of lining up the arguments against the critics or for the faith. That apologetics is not just defending the faith against critics. Obviously, that's an important element, but it's also an opportunity to see more deeply the beauty of the truths of faith and the way that they can penetrate into all kinds of different inquiries. I think the Stephen Barr treatment of science is a really good example of that. It's not just to defeat the materialist assumptions of critics of Christianity. You read his book and you feel like you're listening to a scientist talk who takes joy in the way in which scientific discoveries illuminate and deepen the truths of faith. And so I hope listeners take that away. Don't just sort of bone up on the arguments to defeat the critics. Do that, but also see the arguments as an opportunity to turn black and white faith into technicolor.
Thank you, Professor Reno.
Welcome.
You've been listening to Christian Apologetics with Dr. R.R. Reno. To hear and or to download this conversation, along with hundreds of other spiritual formation programs, visit discerninghearts.com. This has been a production of Discerning Hearts. I'm your host, Chris McGregor. We hope that if this has been helpful for you, that you will first pray for our mission, and if you feel us worthy, consider a charitable donation, which is fully tax deductible, to help support our efforts. But most of all, we hope that you will tell a friend about discerninghearts.com and join us next time for Christian Apologetics with Dr. R.R. Reno.